Hi. Before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to let you know about some bonus content from Spotlight On. Head over to spotlightonpodcast.com/blog and check out Bonus Tracks, the official blog of this podcast. There you'll find special material exclusive to the website, including music recommendations, artist interviews, essays, and more. Have a look. Hello and welcome to Spotlight On, a production of 23 Media Ventures. I'm your host, Lawrence Purrier. Today the spotlight shines on Lithuanian drummer and producer Marius Alexa. Marius has worked as a bandleader, session musician, and solo artist, and in each setting, his sound is his own, reflecting his interests in jazz, world, and electronic club music. Marius spent a decade in London, embedded in the dynamic new jazz scene there. Now back in Lithuania, he recently programmed a small local jazz festival in Vilnius, Tamsta Jazz Weekend, and at the same time he was rolling out his latest release, As They Are. In our talk, Marius takes us into the musical collage that is the new album, and he provides insight into multiple aspects of his creativity. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with Marius, and I hope you do as well. How are you today?
Very good. It's actually 10 p.m. where I'm at. So I just had a late dinner with my wife. And just before that, we were at my first drum teacher's concert with some local musicians. Yeah.
Thanks for making time at the end of your day to do this. I really appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure.
I was reading about you and some of your work and some of your activities, and this wasn't where I was going to start, but since you brought it up, teaching seems like it's important to you. It's something you enjoy. It's an important part of your life.
Yeah, I think basically like just sharing the experiences that I had traveling the world, living in London, playing with loads of different musicians from all around the world. That is really important for me to share with the young musicians community here back in Vilnius, in Lithuania. So this is really important. So not as much the teaching as like sharing the experience with the youth.
Did you have teachers that were particularly impactful on you? Like, were you trained or were you self-taught? How did you come to your musicality?
I obviously had teachers. I started when I was 5, and I didn't have teachers then. My parents said I just liked to hit stuff. I started drumming on peanut butter boxes that were sent to us by some families that were living in Chicago. Back then in 1990s in Lithuania, you couldn't get much Western products. We were freshly independent. So yeah, I was really happy to receive peanut butter, eat it, and then have more and more drums with every can of the peanut butter.
I mean, peanut butter is a very special, very special thing.
Yeah. And then, of course, my mom was a piano teacher at a music school. She brought me in. She brought me into the music school. But I always knew I wanted to play drums. But she didn't want me to play drums. She thought like, oh, drums, because she was classically trained. She thought I should learn something that actually has pitch. So I learned the piano and flute for a few years. But then I started drumming on the piano with my elbows.
The piano's a percussion instrument.
Yeah. tuned percussion instrument.
Yeah, that's right.
So then when I was like 9, I started properly taking like drum lessons. But I think the biggest lessons that I've got was when I moved to London and I started going to jams and playing with all these incredible musicians. I was lucky to be in London when this all new London jazz wave started, this scene with the players like Joe Armon Jones and Ashley Hendry and Nubia Garcia, all these people. So I was lucky to be in London at that particular time when jazz had its like rebirth, I'd say. at least here, like in Europe or UK.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say the biggest teachers were the fellow musicians.
Just to stay there for a moment, in what way, when I think about education as a concept, there's the very direct sitting down, teaching, studying with someone. But then there's also what I think you're alluding to, which is maybe the experiential element of maybe being pushed and challenged by other players of different skills. What is the form of education one gets from their colleagues?
Especially for drums, I think you can learn quite academically or mathematically, even like from the music scores or stuff like that, how to play different rudiments, time signatures and stuff like that. But you can't really get the swing or the shuffle or the feeling. You can't write it down in the notes. It's a certain feeling that you need to, or certain movement that you need to learn, and you learn it from seeing and hearing and playing together with these musicians. I would say, especially in London, because there's such a diverse culture, you know. I had the pleasure of playing with the musicians from Trinidad, from Nigeria, from Ghana, and from Cuba. And each of these countries, they have its own kind of swing to it and its own groove. And then you can only learn this by playing and hearing this music that comes from people that were born there and born in that culture. So I guess that's what I mean by learning with other musicians, and not necessarily drummers. Like playing with a bass player from Trinidad, my good friend Rick Leon James, I remember like playing with him and like, wow, he's placing his notes in a totally different way that I want to learn this. And by playing every Friday at some jam session place, you learn that.
It's interesting because so many of those sounds and rhythms have made their way into your recording, you know, that I very much have been enjoying listening to the new album.
Thank you.
I do want to come back to that in a minute. If you don't mind me asking, could you talk a little bit about what music was available to you earlier in your life? And I ask that question in particular because obviously in the West, or in the US specifically, there's so many perceptions and misperceptions about what life was like in the end of the Soviet era and in the immediate post-Soviet era. You know, you mentioned some of the consumer goods that weren't available.
Yeah.
And I wonder, what was the music you had access to? Did you have access to international and global music? Do you feel like you missed out on any music? I'm curious as to what your musical development was like earlier in life.
Yeah, really good question. Really interesting question. We could talk about like just even the Lithuanian music or musician identity, and how I think being occupied, how these things like affect countries or individual musicians. But
yeah,
answering your question, I think the biggest names in the world, the biggest Western musicians, we still somehow this music through some doors came in, and it was copied from one person to another, and people would gather and listen. We knew who Michael Jackson is, and we knew who Charlie Parker is, but we missed out on a lot of like music or musicians that weren't such big stars, you know. So sometimes I would talk to some friends and they would say, oh, you know this artist, and everyone would know that artist, and I wouldn't, because I would say that the top 10 of the most famous legendary jazz artists, we could have access to these because they were too big not to be known anywhere in the world, but obviously not the whole spectrum.
As you were growing as a musician and as a person going out into the world, realizing that you maybe didn't have the same context or touchstones as some of your peers, was that difficult? Is that alienating? Is it exciting to discover? You know, you can only hear some of this music for the first time once. And so it's exciting to, I know even at my age, I get excited to find something, a new sound is exciting. So I wonder, like, How does that feel when you're in that role?
When I was growing up, the way we would learn, like my brother also is a musician, he's a bass player, and we were growing up together, practicing together, and we would learn from like videotapes, VHS cassettes that were copied so many times that sometimes you can't even hear what notes are these, or if we're watching like a educational drum video, you can't even hear exactly what the person is saying because you got it from your friend drummer that has copied it from someone, like, because you couldn't buy it in the shops. So we had to copy, almost like pirates, those videos because we didn't have access to that as well. It was so magical, you know? We felt like we're special. We're trying to find something that hasn't been done so much in back in Lithuania. So it was also, I don't know, something that is also giving you loads of energy because it's somehow magical. And if we would see some artists coming from USA or Great Britain, we go and see some superstar jazz players from these countries, we would be like, just, you know, these artists and their lives were like utopia for us. Like this is something that is also almost like impossible to achieve, but you're still going for that. It gave a lot of energy, like to practice and to try to do your best. And when I moved to London, I felt like I have much more passion and energy towards actually trying to make it compared to some people that were born there, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah. There's another theme that has come up in reading about you and reading other conversations with you, and you touched on it a little bit earlier. I want to make sure I get it correctly, so please tell me if I'm missing it. But you refer in different ways to this idea of musicians and place, I think would be the best way to say it. Like a few different ways that manifested in other things I've read with you was, one was this notion that outside of maybe some of the folk traditions, there isn't necessarily a Lithuanian music yet, or that the Lithuanian music that is emerging is more of a fusion of other influences. That was sort of one concept that I think I was reading. And the other was, you seem to have a real strong awareness and sensitivity to the idea of how place impacts someone's sound or feel or approach, whether it's the jazz people from New York or the different instrumentalists you talk about being from other cultures. And you allude earlier about the idea of how being an occupied people has some maybe psychological or emotional impact on how you view yourself and your music. And I guess that's all in this pot for me of this idea of sound and feel and place. Can you articulate that better? Like what's your feeling about that?
So we've been independent for more than 30 years now, but the last 400 years, we have been invaded and occupied all the time. And I think because of that, our kind of musical roots were always cut there and there. And at some point in these last 400 years, like the language was deprived. At some point, part of the culture was you couldn't like sing Lithuanian folk songs or write in Lithuanian language. So I think all of this stuff made a big impact in a negative way, where if we go to like Brazil, the music route and continuous music route is like you go back 100, 200 years, it's still the same line, and people that are my age, they're listening to kind of same songs that their parents and grandparents were listening to. This kind of musical root is, you can hear that musical root in nowadays music, in pop music, or you go to Cuba, you can hear those rhythms in their pop music. So it's alive. That root is alive. What I mean is that like my generation or even younger generation in Lithuania, they're not listening to like folk songs. they're detached because it was deprived. And also, I think when you're occupied, like, you lose confidence in yourself. So you're trying to be like someone else. So we have lots of music that sounds a bit like Western music, that sounds a bit like people try to copy. So people are still discovering themselves and trying to understand who we are and trying to understand that we are cool as we are, you know? So I'm not sure if I explained it in a good way, but because of that, like, for an artist like me, first of all, this album is loads of different influences, basically my experience in playing with loads of different artists. And then after living in London, when I came back to Lithuania, I was asking myself, what is my roots? What can I bring to the table in this international scene? And I felt I don't want to just try and put some Lithuanian folk traditions in my music, because I felt like that would be cheating in a way, because I don't feel really connected to it. And because of that, for me, like, let's say electronic music is music that doesn't really have cultural roots in one region. Like, you know, it's not like ethnic and folk music. It's like music that came from new technologies with new tools. And it's like a clear slate. So for me, I feel like this is a place where I can do something and then have different spices of, you know, the music that I have been playing in the past, like jazz and African music and Nigerian Afrobeat and different kind of flavors, you know?
Yeah, there's so much to hear in the new album, which I suppose we should tell listeners is called As They Are.
Yeah.
And all the things you referenced, different cultural rhythms, different instrumentations, different uses of electronics. So I have several questions in and around the music you make, specifically on this album. But my first question is, who's the they in the title? What does the album title refer to?
Actually, all the titles of the album for different tracks, it's like a word collage, and you can even put together your own meanings, but it's actually sentences or phrases cut in pieces and attached to different track names. And this collage idea came very naturally because, like, spontaneously doing this album for 2 or 3 years, the collage techniques were appearing in everything that I was doing. So first of all, having different musicians from different music genre scenes and different places in the world, coming from different cultures, collaborated on this album. So that was already for me some sort of musician and genre collage, you know, because 23 musicians from Lithuania, USA, UK, and Cuba collaborated on this album. And then when I started thinking about the artwork, somehow I picked this collage artist, MT Chills from Japan. She did like a collage design for this. And then somehow this collage concept was in my mind. And I thought, let me also try and do a word collage. So As They Are is a piece of a sentence. And the whole sentence is see things as they are. So these tracks also exist. There's a track called See, a collaboration with a Cuban trumpet player, Yelfris Valdez. There's a track called Things, and there's a title track, As They Are. This phrase, this sentence is kind of a main idea and main of a certain meditation technique that I have been practicing and into. It's a meditation practice called Vipassana. In the last few years, it has been an important thing and an important practice in my life. I decided to use this sentence as well. Also, then by doing things, by starting to rehearse with the live band, these kind of names, and especially As They Are, they started to also get another layer of meaning to me, like even booking certain musicians on the records or for the live gig. I want them to play as they play and be as they are. I don't want to like mold them into something that I want to hear. I wanted to just gather musicians that I like and put them together and see if that can fit and just let them be the way they are and play the way they play, you know?
I suppose you would not choose them if you simply wanted to direct everything they should do.
Yeah.
That does bring me to something else that I saw you mention, which was you have an interest in perhaps creating a work completely of your own making and not utilizing collaborators. And I wonder, is there a limit that you see in collaboration, or is it more about just exploring another way of creating? Like, what's the impulse to try that?
The final result comes out very different. If I do it and I'm planning to do something totally on my own without using any musicians, like I think doing it like that, the creator, which is me in this case, I will be able to hear the music exactly how I feel it. When you're collaborating, like, so let's say I do like a little idea, whether it's starting with drums or with modular synths or with drum machines or writing a little melody and sending it to, let's say, my friend, the keys player, Olli Rockberger, because he has such a individual sound. The way he would put the harmonies would change the feeling of the track so much. If I would do that, I would probably not even go that way, you know? But it's beautiful to see how these different people bring different cultures and different like thoughts to the music. But also it's interesting to just do it on your own and see your own mirror.
We'll be back with more Spotlight On after this break. And now, back to Spotlight On. As a drummer or as a primarily percussion performer, what's your approach to composition? When you sit down to work, when you sit down to compose, what do you sit at? Are you at a keyboard, a stringed instrument, a drum, a notepad? You know, what's your compositional process?
With this album, As They Are, it started from a jam with two other musicians. This keyboard player, Sam Crow, was visiting me from London because he wanted me to record for his band called Native Dancer. I finished the recordings for his band like in 2 days, and we had still 1 day left, and I invited my friend like that plays like loads of electronic instruments over, and we just jammed for 6 hours, and I was lucky to push the record button. So we just recorded everything, and after a month or two, I opened the session and I heard some really inspiring moments in the jam, and I started working on just these little sketches, these little moments, and expanding them. So let's say I like a groove that I played in certain section, or like a modular synth sequence, or just like a sound, and then starting to put things on top of it, like slowly like shaping it to a proper track. So as I said, like, this was like a collage technique, collage compositional technique, just trying to put things together on top of each other. When I'm alone, I sometimes start from just a sequence on my modular synths, or like just playing with different sounds, just finding just a drone, or sometimes practicing bass guitar and finding a nice riff. Or sometimes I whistle, loads of different techniques, I guess. But it's a good question, because my goal is to kind of have a quick go-to way of composing, because I'm trying to find my recipe to where I like, I know it works and I can be productive. Because I think this is important for me, because music is really a feeling to me, and you need to capture the feeling of now, or at least a feeling of today. I feel like if I work on music today and I finish that thing, then it's really powerful. And if I'm coming back to my idea and do it for too long, if it loses the I don't know, that feeling that you were feeling when you were capturing and writing, there is a reason why you did or you wrote a certain piece of music or a motif in that moment, because you probably felt like that. So I think it's really important to have a skill of capturing the whole thing as quick as possible before it's gone.
Yeah, I hear a lot that some artists walk around with their phone and are constantly recording on the memo recorder on their phone, even if it's just humming or singing a part or picking up an instrument and banging out, just to capture that moment and to revisit it. Do you approach composition as a form of work that you create space for, or do you wait for inspiration? Like, are you conjuring inspiration, or are you waiting for it?
I just dedicate time for it and prioritize it in the day. Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm waiting for inspiration. I'm trying to fish for it like every day and trying to create something every day if it's possible. Sometimes it's not possible. If, let's say, when I was preparing for the live gig or when I was launching the album, there was so many stuff that I just had to do on my computer, you know, with the help of the label or the distributors and all the other people that helped to launch the project. But generally, my perfect day is where I wake up in the morning, have breakfast, and then go to the studio and start the day with 3-4 hours of experimenting or writing or editing or producing music or even just reading about composition. Actually, that is something that I'm doing right now. I want to educate myself a bit more about forms and structures and composition. So I just finished a book by John Cage called Silence and started with some Schoenberg compositional book. Yeah, just trying to continue to be learning, you know?
Do you ever use tools or prompts? Do you ever use any exercises like that to spur the creativity? Or for you, is it more about just playing on the instrument until you find a melody or a riff? Or,
to be honest, somehow I'm lucky to always have so many ideas and energy to do this. It's, for me, it's the lack of time. For me, it's 24 hours in the day is not enough. Like, if I had 30 hours in the day, I would probably be doing even more things. Like, I have like ideas for 3 albums ahead right now. And if I had time, I would also do collaborations, but I have to always be careful of also what I say yes to, because if I say yes to too many things, then everything gets slow. Maybe it is the time in my life where I feel like I always have inspiration. If I don't have inspiration, I don't just go to a shower. That's where the idea starts coming, you know?
Yeah.
It's probably the reason why people are singing or whistling when they shower. Is probably where you feel like just warm and relaxed. Usually after having a shower, I run to my phone and write ideas that popped into my mind, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have a name for, or do you think about genre for your music?
I would say right now it's world music, but kind of world music has a like certain cliche. It's like ethnic music, but I guess, yeah, it's like world music, or if we want to say, we can call it jazz, but in a broad kind of perspective, like very broad perspective. Because what do we call jazz nowadays? Is Kamasi Washington jazz, or is Shabaka Hutchins Comet Is Coming, is that jazz? I don't know. Some people would say jazz died with the swing era. For me, Miles Davis's Bitches Brew is the best jazz that I've ever heard, you know? So I guess it's a mixture of loads of different influences, but when I need to call it or tag the genres, I usually say it's like jazz, electronic, world music. Yeah. I don't know. John Hassell had his own kind of name for the music that he was doing, and he called it Fourth World. I don't know if you're familiar with John Hassell's music.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, fourth world music, meaning old ethnic genres meeting new technologies. That's a good way of describing my music, I guess.
Yeah, that is. That's pretty good. That's about as close as I've heard so far. Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you consider yourself part of a community?
I definitely felt a part of London jazz community when I was living in London. I left London in 2019 and came back home. I lived there for 10 years. So when I was living there and just touring nonstop, like 150, sometimes 200 gigs a year, I definitely was in that circle and definitely part of that community. Right now, I'm not sure. Right now, I feel like I'm like hibernating and searching and experimenting and searching for my own sound. And I feel lucky that I'm 37 and I can allow myself to experiment. So I teach and I let myself experiment with music and give myself time, because when I came back to Lithuania in 2019, I came back because I wanted to run away from this. I actually wanted to run away from too many like influences and experiences, you know, because if you play with someone strong and if you're playing loads of different projects, like every project influences you, you know, and you're being dragged from one thing to another. And it's good to have this experience because, you know, you have the depth and different angles you can do in on your own music later on. But I felt like I had enough of these influences and I needed time to digest and place to digest. And Vilnius in Lithuania is really good place to digest. Not too many things are happening. Like, things are happening here, but by far not as much as in London, you know?
Yeah.
You know, London, what? London is like 10 million people in one city. We have less than 3 million in the whole country in Lithuania. So different scale. And I also, during pandemic, it was a really quiet time. So I guess I couldn't call myself a part of Lithuanian jazz community right now because I haven't been that active in gigging. I was just like in the studio every day for the last 3-4 years. And now the fruits of this hibernation is coming. So I had this album As They Are come out, and then a few collaborations came out with local musicians, and my drums only solo album is coming out in autumn that has been recorded like last year already. And we'll see, but I feel like there is a global community of musicians that are like brave and open to look for new sounds and not follow what is popular or what is hip at the moment, that people that want to find different sounds. I actually recently had the pleasure of meeting Church Andrews and Matt Davis. It's like a duo from the UK, and they're doing like some amazing music. I was organizing this 3 days little jazz festival called the Tamsta Jazz Weekend, and I was programming that festival, and I invited this duo and did the workshop, and I heard so many ideas from them, how they're just geeking out in their little flats, like searching for different inspirations and using like programming techniques on their laptops, connecting electronic instruments with acoustic drums that are sending signals and playing the synths. So, you know, like I met these people for the first time in my life, but I feel like we were part of the family of musicians that are trying to push boundaries, I guess.
How important is it to you to continually discover music that's new to you, or at the very least, sounds that are new to you? Like, do you look for a steady diet of raw material?
Yeah, I think it's really important for me. It's like It's fueling the curiosity, first of all, because to have curiosity, you have to fuel it, to have curiosity, to be curious. So I'm constantly delegating time specifically for that. When I find something, especially if it's something that hasn't been popular yet, it gives me, first of all, great joy. And secondly, it gives me a feeling that I'm also trying to find myself in my music. Let's say I listen to Japanese ancient music. I listen to that music and I can't recognize what I feel. And this is the most exciting thing for me, to feel the certain feeling for the first time in my life and not to be able to say what I'm feeling. That's what I'm looking for in music anyways. Like, I'm not trying to find something that I relate to. I'm trying to find something that I don't relate to at all, and I can't even recognize it. That's the feeling that I'm looking for, and music gives it to me, like with no drugs.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting comment, because I hadn't quite thought of it that way, but that I experienced that same thing, and I can very much appreciate a traditional song structure, pop song. You know, I like good melody and accessible music. I don't distinguish good and bad that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I hear, especially in the last few years, there is this movement in the jazz meets electronic meets global influence world where people are melding their cultural perspective into this experimental music world or instrumental music world that I find very exciting. And when my ear hears it, it's very much drawn to it. I think I'm starting to recognize, in the same way as it takes a while to be able to understand some like post-bop jazz. Like the first few times I heard early 60s John Coltrane, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't digest it. But enough people I trusted encouraged me to try that I kept going back, and then it cracked for me. The code cracked. And there's a lot of that happening now with music, where there are these different contexts that I might not understand. I might not understand the rhythmic bass, or I might hear the exotic part of a melody. But once you get past the exoticism, the actual depth of what's happening it's really amazing. And that feeling of, I don't really know how to place this. I don't know if this is a happy song or a sad song or a challenging song or whatever it is. Like, to transcend all the reaction and to just have it hit is a very exciting part of listenership, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You said experimental music, and obviously experimental music has a certain cliche. We usually say if we hear something named experimental, that's going to be something really odd and really avant-garde and weird. But we can experiment by merging country songs with, I don't know, techno. That's going to be an experiment too. So yeah, this is like experimental music. And I think also it's a mirror of the world right now. This kind of merging of different genres is the mirror of the world today, because, you know, we have internet, like people from different cultures are living in the same cities, in the same buildings, and that's how the world is today. And it is important, I think, to create music that is a mirror of real life today.
Yeah.
And I feel like in London, this was the real thing, and that's why people, young people, got drawn to it again, because it was a mirror of the life today. Because for the last, I don't know, if we go back 15, 20 years ago, if you go to a jazz gig, usually you would see like an academic older audience, because I think it was stuck for a moment. It wasn't a mirror of the time. Yeah.
I've talked to other artists here who I think we lost for the better part of a generation or more that connection to jazz's roots as primarily dance music. It became conservatory music.
Yeah.
And we forgot that it originally started in dance halls. And while it's fun to go watch highly academic technical music, I certainly enjoy modern composers and people who do that stuff. But
yeah,
but I think there's a strand or an element right now that is very exciting, that's making the music more relevant to young people. And that's very fun to see. But I also think the point you made about it, this music being a reflection of, I think it's the reflection of the best or most aspirational version of what we can have today. There's so much very real sort of negativity and conflict in the world. And I wouldn't want to be so idealistic as to ignore that. But things like the music you're talking about give us sort of a higher aim and show us that the differences are where it's interesting.
You know, the world collage, we all fit together, you know. If we allow ourselves to be as we are and allow others to be as they are, great things come from diversity.
Yeah. I think that's a great place for us to end our time together. Thank you so much for making time to do this. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you so much, Marius Alexa. And as always, thank you for listening to Spotlight On, a production of 23 Media Ventures. I'm your host and executive producer, Lawrence Purrier. We're produced and edited by Michael Donaldson, and our theme music is by Q Burns' Abstract Message. If you like what you've heard, please share us with a friend and leave a review on your podcast platform of choice. For past episodes, web-only exclusives, and to join our mailing list, visit us online at spotlightonpodcast.com. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. Be safe and stay in touch.